Something wicked cold this way comes. Get your house ready for the winter. Heating oil isn't as expensive as it was a few years ago, but that hasn't stopped Mainers from investing in weatherization, upgrading their furnaces, or installing heat pumps in the past 6 months. My guest today would urge that you do the same. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on Maine Calling, we'll explore the case for why now is a great time to put some thought and perhaps time and money into weatherizing your home and making it more fuel and energy efficient. We'll explore some of the programs that can help you get started and possibly to fund some of those improvements. You may have heard a neighbor talk about their new heat pump. We'll find out how they work and how long it takes to earn back the money you put into one. And as always, we want to hear from you, making your house ready for winter. Today on Maine Calling. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Winter will be here before you know it, and with it, higher utility bills and concerns about just how much longer our furnaces or pellet stoves will last. Today we have three experts to answer your questions about getting your home ready for winter. Joining me in studio, Dana Fisher. He's the Efficiency Maine Residential Program Manager. Richard Riegel Burbank is President and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance, and Tux Turkle is a staff writer for the Portland Press Herald. As always, we want to hear from you. What steps have you taken to button up your home for the approaching winter? And what questions do you have about the most efficient heaters or where best to insulate? And while keeping your house able to breathe still, very important. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all of you. Richard, we'll start with you. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago that heating oil prices were so high here in Maine that we were worried that people might actually, you know, freeze during the winter. It was a crisis. It was a real situation. It was also a moment when it seemed to me that weatherization and efficiency rose to the fore as a topic of conversation and as something that we began to look at more seriously at this time of year. Oil prices aren't where they were then, but you would say that weatherization is still an important process and that people are doing it.
Well, absolutely. I'll let our customers that call us speak to that issue. Everyone that decides to invest in a project has their own reasons for it. And let's face it, back when oil was approaching $5 a gallon, there were a lot of people that were looking to avoid those costs. Nowadays, people haven't forgotten those costs, so they're thinking out for the future, for an expected increase in the future. But as the economy's been doing better, we've been seeing a lot of our customers wanting to be more comfortable, and they know that they're saving energy. And like I said, they have their own reasons. Sometimes it's climate change, and they want to reduce their carbon emissions. Sometimes it's switching to a local fuel. Sometimes it's being more comfortable, or they have a baby come into the house. Or they just bought a house, and their last house or their rental was horrible, and they're not going to make that happen. But lately,
or they're selling a house, and they want to make it attractive.
Absolutely, absolutely. So people are still doing it. Their reasons have changed. And it's also interesting to see how the economy recovery is helping with that, with home buying and people investing in their homes.
So, Richard, when we look at that too, I was seeing yesterday as a baseline for this winter that the federal government has its winter fuels outlook projections. So they're looking at a winter in the Northeast that's supposed to be 17 degrees colder than our record warm last year, and that means also, they're looking for heating oil prices to rise on average 42 cents. That's what they're saying. So, for example, right now, the statewide average is 193. That's the governor's energy office. So if you add that, and if they're right, you know, you're talking like 235 or somewhere like that, not the $4 that we suffered with a couple of years ago, but still, you know, maybe an incentive for people to want to do something.
And Tux, fair to say that people are assuming, expecting that oil prices over the next 10 years or 20 years are not going to go down.
Well, that's, you know, it's if you look at the roller coaster, it goes like, and but in the end, it does inch up over time. And so we certainly have these years like we've had the last two that have been a wonderful relief for people. But unless something very unexpected happens, the long-term trend still seems to be up.
And Dana Fisher, even if you don't take the long view, there are incentives and other reasons for folks to act now, to invest now in their homes.
That's right. There's never been a better time to invest in energy efficiency than right away, right now. the Home Energy Savings Program is available statewide. Efficiency Maine continues to offer rebates on energy audits and basic air sealing. Robust $700 rebates per insulation zone for attic insulation or doing spray foam in your basement from the box sills down or dense packing the exterior walls of your house. We also have incentives on every manner of highest efficiency heating systems from central conventional fuel systems to the highly popular heat pumps. All of this can be financed. We've got great financing products available. And homeowners are taking advantage of it. You know, Richard talks about prior years when oil prices and propane prices were really elevated and people were concerned about that. And there was a big rush and the industry grew a lot and we learned a lot of lessons and really streamlined the process. But even as oil has come down in price, the activity level has remained very steady and very high for these most cost-effective best practices in improving energy efficiency. You know, last fiscal year, you know, ending this last July, we had more than 8,000 homes participate statewide. So, you know, very good participation. And we're continuing to see that through this fall. A lot of contractors still active all around the state. And, of course, they can all be found on our website using our registered vendor locator tool. We try to make it as simple as possible, and we have a call center live folks hanging out in Brunswick ready to answer the phone and answer any questions that homeowners across the state may have and how to participate with our program.
And it also, I guess, starts with an audit. And I was going to ask you, do you have a sense based on the participation in terms of audits as to whether these are first-timers getting into the game of weatherization?
Well, there has been a little bit of a shift. I think that we're seeing, you know, overall trends, we're seeing fewer really expensive projects. So as the price of oil has come down, people have been a little bit more price sensitive in the scope of the project works, the work that they're doing. And like I said, you know, a lot of heat pumps, 15,000 heat pumps now in the past 3 years through the Home Energy Savings Program, 1,500 in residential properties just in the last 3 months. But we are continuing to see a steady stream of insulation projects. People are really seeing the benefits of making their house less drafty. It makes them more resilient and resistant to major price fluctuations. I can speak to that in my own experience as well. One of the things about living in Maine is kind of anticipating those big heating bills coming in and kind of the anxiety that comes with that. But once you really weatherize your house and bring down those costs and start moving towards high efficiency heating systems, those bills kind of dissipate. You start to lose that anxiety around having to deal with high costs at any particular time after the holidays.
Richard, living in a house is a bit of an ongoing audit. I know that when I get to the top of the stairs, there's a cold draft that comes in. I know when I open the closet underneath the stairs, there's a cold draft. I know when I reach under the cupboard in the left corner of the kitchen, there's a draft. I sort of know where the air might be coming in. But explain why an audit is so important as a starting point.
Well, because so much of how a house works isn't straightforward, you have to diagnose the issue. And because the house doesn't cover the cost of its own improvements, it's the homeowner that decides to make that investment. The audit process is a little bit like medicine or working with a good doctor. You really need to sit down with a homeowner and understand their goals. And the professionals that are trained and experienced at looking at a house needs to have their client's voice in the back of their mind as they're going through the house finding the opportunities. But there's a lot of typical stuff out there that always tends to need to happen to seal air leaks in the attic and such. But until you really test it or come back on that cold winter day, and it's not convenient to schedule all of our customers for January 15th when it's windy, we can replicate that with a blower door air leakage test. So that's a big part of the process to diagnose what's going on and then lay out all the different opportunities on the table. And many times each individual improvement might have relative importance to that homeowner based upon comfort in a particular room or not having icicles on the roof that could end up being an ice dam that causes damage in a snowstorm, or their heating system is about to die and they have $15,000 to spend and somehow the heating system solution has to be in there. So it's sorting that whole process out. And finally, to do a safety check on heating systems, because you can tighten up a house, and if there's a pre-existing indoor air quality problem or a combustion safety problem, you could miss that and be so successful at one improvement but cause other problems. So there's a lot going into that.
But I just want to say, I don't want to take any of your business, but but there's also plenty of opportunity I've found over the years for the do-it-yourselfer to make vast improvements in their home. And I think some people may be timid about taking a big step and hiring an auditor, and so they don't do anything. But, you know, the internet is full of YouTube videos and all kinds of help. You know, you can do a lot in your house. I mean, I've taken a 1978 Cape with a lot of additions on it, and we heat it with a couple Rinnai through-the-wall heaters and some wood, and it's very comfortable, and you can do that. It just takes time.
Right. You can find, if you take a good look around the foundation, you can see daylight coming in, and you can fix take obvious steps to begin with.
Right. And, yep. You know, there's resources to help you do it right, because is confusing. Insulation, weather stripping, there's a million kinds, and they all have specific purposes.
I think there's some middle ground there too. If you we have a $400 incentive towards a basic air sealing and assessment. And so if you call a professional and you have them come in and do run the blower door, do a thermal camera analysis, and you're there and you're walking around behind them and marking up where the leakage points are through the house, you're going to get a very good sense of what's going on in the house and get a good idea of what things you feel comfortable doing. And you also have the opportunity to gauge whether, you want to do additional work with that contractor or try and get quotes about a different thing. So I think there's a lot of opportunities there. And I just, like, in terms of resources, there are a lot of good things on the internet. On the Efficiency Main website, on our insulation page, I've got a link to a DOE insulation guidebook for contractors to give to homeowners. And I love this document because it has fantastic photos and really documents best practices. So anybody who's a do-it-yourselfer and you really want to get down to what the proper techniques are and what sort of things to look at, that's a great resource. I always direct people to check that out.
I did want to ask, as we move on from the audit, how much is an audit? And so you have a $400 rebate. How much does that help with the overall cost?
That's a great question. So, all of our program is market-based, and so all the independent contractors, men and women that work in the program, they all set their own prices and set their services. We offer a $400 rebate with the consumer kicking in $200 towards that project. So a minimum $600 scope of work. There are plenty of contractors around and listed with us that will do that basic level of service for $600 as a lead-in. And so you pay them $200 and you can sign off on the rebate, and that goes directly to the contractor. There are contractors that will say, well, I'm going to roll up with my truck and guys and we're going to be there for a whole day, and that service amount is $1,000 or $1,200.
Can a $600 audit reveal enough to make it worth the money?
Absolutely. I mean, information is really, really important, especially if you're going to do something yourself. It's helpful to have someone guide you so you're not making a lot of fuss over something you have to undo.
Right. The one thing that makes me nervous is, in terms of DIY, is the attic and making sure that, there's no ice buildup on the roof, and it's breathing, but you don't want cold air coming in. I still don't understand it. I'm still not sure how it works or why it works. But I do want to get to heat pumps because you've mentioned it a few times here. It's very popular, as you said. Dana, what were the numbers?
Well, more than 15,000 have been installed in the state of Maine in homeowners, in residential buildings in the last 3 years. 1,500, so you know, more than 500 have been installed in the last couple of months, each of the last months. And they're making a lot of headway. There are more than 400 contractors installing them statewide. And I was telling Richard and Tux before about a study that I read and checked out some statistics on heat pump installations in Scandinavia. And this one particular graph was of Norway. And Norway has about 5 million people, or about four times as many as the state of Maine. And in the last 10 years, so like from the period of like 2004, 2005 to 2015, Norway has installed 900,000 heat pumps. So if you divide that by four, that's the equivalent of Maine installing roughly 250,000 heat pumps in a 10-year period. We're at the beginning of that curve. It's coming this way. Heat pumps are being installed heavily in parts of Canada and Nova Scotia and other parts of the country in northern areas. This is a major trend, and a significant portion of Maine housing is going to have heat pumps.
The other thing we were mentioning about heat pumps and we were talking about earlier is that after the hot summer we just had, people are appreciating that heat pumps are also air conditioners. They're primary air conditioners. So as the climate warms, probably a good thing to have efficient air conditioning rather than the thing we stick in the window.
You haven't installed one yet, though, Tux.
Which one?
A heat pump.
I haven't yet. Yeah. If I was doing the renovations of my house today, I certainly would. But I did this stuff number of years ago.
Richard, at what point does a heat pump pay for itself and start saving you money? I realize it's different circumstance.
It depends upon a lot of different things, and I'm glad you asked that. It's kind of like a heating equivalent of the replacement light bulb. It used to be CFLs, now it's LEDs. You just need to get that. But there were cases where people were putting super efficient equipment for lighting in the attic, and they never turn it on. So you have to be sensible in how you put it in. But heat pumps are fantastic for the predominant part of the heating season. Where they don't work as well is midwinter, when it's really, really cold, to take the full load on the house. But the fact that they can very efficiently heat throughout the whole year, they're perfect for these days that we'll have in January that are above freezing, and it gets colder at night. But the way they interact with other systems is really important to incorporate too. For example, hot water heating. If the current heating system heats the hot water as well,
you have a boiler,
and that's just sitting down there not working, but it's sitting there, this big locomotive, just to heat water you wash your hands with, and the heat pump is taking the load, like hot water heating becomes an important consideration. And the heat pump lasts longer into the heating season if your house is better insulated. And they're building new houses now that are insulated well with just heat pumps.
I know we have a few heat pump questions, folks on the line, and also reaching us through email and social media. We'll get to that, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments. The number again is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Apple Acres Farm, offering You Pick Apples, farm-to-table shopping, and lunch in Cornish. AppleAcresFarm.com. By Maine College of Health Professions, hosting an open house on October 19th and 22nd. More at mchp.edu. And Bay Chamber Concerts, committed to enriching communities with musical performances throughout Mid-Coast Maine. Learn more at baychamberconcerts.org.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Mikhail Baryshnikov tells us about the time he ended up at dinner with Donald Trump. Not exactly a match made in heaven, but a story you won't want to miss.
And then he said, "Why you didn't ask me for money?"
And we'll get a lesson in movie making with the novelist T.C. Boyle. That's next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Join us for the New Yorker Radio Hour coming up tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. Beginning on October 15th, I'll be stepping up to the mic as the new host of A Prairie Home Companion. Each Saturday night, we'll be featuring incredible live performances by a wide array of some of the best musicians in the world, plus a bit of spoken word, some great comedy, and I'll write a brand new song each week. All this and more right here live each Saturday night.
Join us for A Prairie Home Companion with Chris Thiele coming up this Saturday, tomorrow at 6 p.m. and a rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 12 o'clock.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, Home Winterization. With me in studio, Tux Turkle is a staff writer for the Portland Press-Herald. Dana Fisher is Efficiency Maine Residential Program Manager. And Richard Regal Burbank is President and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I want to go back to heat pumps. We have a few questions. In fact, let's just go right to the phones first. We'll go to Vincent, who is calling from Wayne. Hi, Vincent.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about the heat pumps. I have a home in Wayne that's very well insulated, very tight. I heated it with wood and propane for years and never had a problem. I have huge solar gain and the house is tight. Because it's going on the market, in fact, it's being listed today, the broker dropped a bombshell on me yesterday. I spent the money to put in two separate heat pumps with the separate heads in the house and separate condensers and compressors outside. And she told me that she's found out that a lot of buyers, the lending agents for the buyers, are balking at heat pumps and that she feels I should put a second system in the house. Go back to an additional propane system in addition to the heat pumps. Have you heard such a thing in the real estate market?
Thanks. That's a great question. I would look around for a different broker. This has come up from time to time, but there are mortgage companies that offer that don't have any problem with that. Heat pumps are a primary heat source in most parts of the country. And so on the majority of the forms for the mortgage brokers or the insurance companies, heat pumps are a perfectly valid form. And I know that there are a number of individuals who have had success selling their house with nothing but heat pumps as their primary heat source. So I'd push back a little bit on that. I shouldn't have said seek another broker for sure, but that's a bridge too far. But really, I think that if folks look out there a little bit, they'll find that there are opportunities and that quickly going to become an accepted form of heating.
Yeah, Richard?
Where wood heat is so traditional in Maine, I definitely have heard about it when wood that you have to actually put into the firebox as the only source of heat has been a big problem. But something able to run while you're away from the home is the key thing here, and heat pumps work beautifully for that. Yeah. And if it's well insulated, it's balanced to the load.
Yeah. Tux, have you come across this in reporting?
You know, not recently. Yeah. It's like he said. I think it was something earlier on when the banks and mortgage companies wanted central heating systems. But I think it may be not just finding another broker or not. It may be shopping around for the lender, because that's probably where the obstacle
and
is.
And in fact, when wood became really big at the last oil crisis, the oil crisis in the 70s, a lot of new homes were homes that had electric heat solely to satisfy the bank, and they actually burned wood all the time. And heat pumps are much more efficient than electric baseboards, so I don't see why that should be an issue.
A couple more questions on heat pumps. Do heat pumps cause any concerns in terms of radon?
No, there's no correlation between those two. So the radon is a soil gas that comes up. And
naturally,
And it's naturally occurring, and it depends on where your house is as to whether there's radon or not. And really, that comes down to, you know, a dirt basement. And that kind of is a weatherization topic. If you have a dirt basement, that's one of the top things to address before you get much further.
You want to put plastic over it at least? Or?
Plastic. plastic or a dimpled membrane or something and have that wrap around the basement walls and then spray foam down over that. That thousands of homes in the last few years have taken care of that. It dramatically changes the whole house because you just don't have that air infiltration and moisture.
I wondered if the caller was thinking about radon from water, like from heat pumps that use like a geothermal. This is an air source heat pump, and maybe people don't understand that. Yeah.
This is Richard. Actually, it could be related to an increase in radon. And this is why looking at the house as a whole is important. Because let's say you had an old boiler that was super inefficient and you burned 800 gallons a year in the basement and the air came from the basement. Every gallon of oil consumes about 1,800 cubic feet of air. And the way you mitigate radon is you increase ventilation. So if you've offset all the heating and the ventilation from an old heating system down the basement, and you have an existing radon problem, having an inefficient heating system or a leaky house is not really valid radon mitigation, but it's related. So
you're describing my house is concerning me a little bit.
That's a good point, Richard.
From Matt, I hope that one of your guests will accurately dispel the myth that a house has to breathe. This is just not true. A home has to have proper ventilation and an appropriate moisture management system. As a building scientist myself, we spend a lot of time educating people on this and other home performance subjects. I used the word to breathe. I apologize. It was my layman's description for my lack of understanding, really, about how to do attics. But can you just mentioned the drafty house and how it plays in, but there is a difference, Richard, here between breathing and being ventilated.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the roof ventilation issues are related to moisture accumulation in the roof or in keeping the roof deck cold enough so it doesn't melt snow and cause ice dams. And a lot of people confuse roof ventilation in that area as ventilation for the people inside that are breathing the air. And air quality has to be pure air, and often we load our houses with things that don't purify the air. They do quite the opposite. They pollute the air. So you need some air change in order for that to occur. But it doesn't mean a willy-nilly open everything up. There's a certain degree of tightness so that you're in control of the separation between inside and outside. But in new houses, we really should be putting ventilation systems in place for the people. So we need to keep the house dry and preserve the interior surfaces from degradation from rot and mold. We need to keep roofs cold so it doesn't melt snow, and we need to provide fresh air for our occupants. But how that happens isn't necessarily the old-fashioned lit a house, breathe.
And, yeah. Keith, there are standards, as engineers know, for how many air changes per hour is required in a house, and you may know the numbers better than I do, Richard, but right now homes are a leaky home, maybe like your house, maybe putting six, eight air changes an hour, and the standard is probably closer to one or something like that,
or a half. But the new mantra, instead of houses have to breathe, is really being replaced by build it tight, insulate. I mean, build it tight, right, ventilate right.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Caitlin in Scarborough. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi. I had a question about energy audits. In recently moving to Maine a couple of years ago, I wasn't fully aware of the Energy Efficiency Maine program. And in a rush to get things done kind of before winter, we had been told in our home inspection that we needed a new furnace, that it was really inefficient, that there was a lot of insulation problems. So we replaced our furnace and did a lot of insulation work, but then kind of realized about Efficiency Maine after. And what I wondered is, if you've already done work like that and spent a lot of money in those investments, is it too late to get the rebates to do the audit kind of retroactively, or is it too late to do some of those rebates?
That's a great question. We require that an energy auditor is involved in the process to verify that, you're taking the right steps. We really try and get that message out to everyone. And so in order to get a rebate on insulation, you need to have an energy auditor involved in that aspect of it. But it's not too late. I mean, I think that if you have an energy auditor come in and you look at the different kinds of projects that you may want to continue to do around your house, you can still take advantage of the programs. You know, fixing houses or making them more efficient is it's a multi-stage process that takes time and effort. And some people do it very quickly and some people take it over time. And so no matter where you are in that process, we really encourage people to take a look at our program and get some consultation. You know, an energy audit with a blower door where they do air sealing at that time, we talked about this a few minutes ago, the average reduction in airflow more than easily pays for the out-of-pocket costs in the first year or two in most houses. So, you know, it's a great way to take those steps and continue to take advantage of the rebates and look at the criteria around projects.
Yeah, Richard.
And if you've already made significant investments, there may be a few adjustments. Just like when you're making a big pot of soup, you need to taste it before you serve it up, and most of it's all in there. And in the course of improving your house, maybe there's a few leaks here and there, and you see a lot of the big ones, and then there's a few bigger ones that were sneakier, and so you can tackle those. And as far as the rebate, sometimes we have customers that they don't have the money to do the complete category of improvement to get the $700 for the attic. So they might do half of it, and then they'll do some of it later if the programs are still there. By completing that whole category, they finish. And you might have done that. Maybe you have one small attic, you know, one small attic that you've already done. You've got a medium-sized attic that you've already done. Then you've got a big attic you haven't quite gotten to. By doing that final big attic, you needed the others done before you could get the rebate. So these could just be stepping stones to getting those solid rebates.
Yeah. 1-800-3 Sorry, Caitlin, I just want to give the number again, and we'll come back to you. 1-800-399-3566. If you're just joining us, we're talking about weatherization today on Maine Calling, the number 1-800-399-3566. Caitlin, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so it sounds like for future work and continuation of projects, those might be applicable, but you really have to have the audit done beforehand in order to actually get the rebates for work done. Anything that you've done in the past doesn't exactly apply unless it's part of a bigger project that you might be eligible for, it sounds like.
Yeah, this is kind of a wonky point, but part of the principle of the rebate dollars and the use of these conservation dollars is really to advocate changes in decision-making for consumers. So we're really, the focus of the rules and the programs is really to be there as a point to leverage those limited dollars to having people make decisions towards the very best practices.
And what's the turnaround? So someone's listening today and says, oh, I'd like to get an audit and maybe spray foam my basement. Could they start this process tomorrow and have this done before the snow flies?
They probably could. This is the high season. You know, this is October and people are very busy and contractors are getting scheduled out. There are contractors that their schedule is booked into January, but frankly, they weatherize all winter long. And so if you call around and, you know, you might be able to get people to schedule it in the next month or 2 months. But even if you have to wait until January, you won't be disappointed. You'll really like it. So, you know, make those calls, get quotes from multiple vendors. Find somebody that you really click with, that offers services that you're looking for, and take those steps now.
Yeah. Tux, I'm curious again. We'll go back to your house. Have you insulated the attic, sprayed around the foundation? Have you taken any of these other steps that you've reported on?
I've taken all those steps over time, though. Let's see. I've done it just a little bit at a time. You know, I a lot of people like to say they'll hire someone and get the whole thing done. But as Richard pointed out, you discover stuff as you go on. You know, you do the big stuff and then you go, oh, wait, I'm feeling a draft here by the thing. And of course, also with a building, they move over time. You know, things shift around. So it's hard to, you know, just have someone come in there and say, oh, that's done. We're good forever.
Right, right.
So I think it's a process.
All right, we're going to take some more calls. They're coming in. More heat pump questions, other questions as well. The number 800-399-3566. We'll take a short break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup, Vladimir Putin cancels a visit to France over a disagreement on Syria. An American warship strikes Yemen, and Thailand mourns the death of its king, the world's longest reigning monarch.
Join us for the second hour of the Diane Rehm Show, the International Week in Review, coming up in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on LA Theater Works, Adam and Luke are long-term partners with very different views on salvation.
He's afraid I'll die before I get a chance to accept Christ, and then we won't be able to be in the afterlife together.
Next fall by Jeffrey Knauss. Next time on LA Theater Works.
Join us for LA Theater Works coming up Sunday evening at 9 o'clock.
And welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, advice on getting your home ready for the approaching cold weather. With me in studio, Richard Regal Burbank, president and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. Dana Fisher is with Efficiency Maine, and Tux Turkle is a staff writer for the Portland Press-Herald. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to Bucksport here, and we'll talk with Corey. Hi, Corey.
Hey, how are you today?
Good, thanks.
Good. I got a late 90s 14-foot wide by 70 mobile home that is on a gravel pad. My wife and I were looking at possibly putting in a heat pump, but my question is, how do I keep the water line under my floors from freezing without the heat from my furnace? I burn 400 to 500 gallons of heating oil in a 24-month period.
Okay. Heat pumps work in mobile homes first, and then, as you pointed out, you need to keep the place heated, especially if you're going away.
Yeah, that can be a problem in a mobile home or other homes that might have a really cold basement area that's not fully enclosed. I've seen this with houses on posts. You know, this is a similar sort of issue. Sometimes it's coming up with a plan to protect that plumbing. The traditional main basement uses geothermal heating. You know, the earth is on average 55 degrees. So as long as you don't have too much infiltration or heat loss, it's usually able to keep it above freezing. And I usually see pipes freeze where there's cold air infiltrating right there, freezing the pipe. So for a trailer, often there's some sort of skirting of some sort going around it as a buffer. So it's like a crawl space. Making sure that that's as solid as you can get it to prevent the infiltration might be one thing that you can do. And you may need some heat tape. And ultimately, monitoring it. You know, it's like that for mobile homes or for houses on posts, or sometimes it was originally a camp and now they're using it throughout the winter. You got to kind of tweak it.
Had a pipe freeze. It was a nail hole, just a little nail hole, and the wind comes through and that pipe is done for.
And sometimes I've seen mobile homes where they've actually put a foundation on it and then it kind of solves that problem, but it is problematic.
Okay. Corey, good luck with that. Let's go to Bonnie.
We switch to another topic, I think this is a great one I really wanted to bring up. Right now we have kind of a special incentive for mobile home owners. So if you are an owner, if it's an owner-occupied mobile home, we have a $1,000 rebate towards basic weatherization there are a number of energy auditors around the state. They'll perform basic air sealing, and some portion of that will go towards insulating the underbelly, and that energy auditor would be able to help you address those frozen plumbing issues or concerns about that. And then you could do the heat pump as well. And the copay for mobile homeowners to get that $1,000 rebate is only $50 out of pocket. So you could get some really great advice and some serious work that would make a big, big difference and make it so that that heat pump would really be able to provide all the heating you need.
And you can get that at the Efficiency Maine website.
That's right.
Details.
EfficiencyMaine.com.
Okay. Corey, sorry I cut you off early. I hope you heard that. Bonnie is in Yarmouth. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi there. I wanted to ask about one of your opening statements. I didn't understand it. I have a 20-year-old furnace that I want to replace and have been saving for it, and I don't really understand everything. Various people that helped me with things have suggested getting a heat pump. But this statement about that a heat pump is a primary air conditioner source and great through the year, but not in the dead of winter. Well, what did you mean, or didn't I write that down correctly?
Thanks so much for calling, Bonnie. This is Dana. I kind of want to, you know, when Richard mentioned that, I want to push back a little bit on that. I you know, heated my house, and granted, I have an old house. It's in the 1830s, New Englander, but pretty small. And I've been tightening it up over the years. But and we talked about this last year when we did this program. I heat my house almost entirely with a heat pump. And last year after our show, I said, you know what? I'm going to really figure out how far I can push this heat pump to make things happen. And so last winter, and granted, it wasn't the craziest winter ever. It wasn't that frigid. But I displaced—
No, it was quite mild.
yeah, not bad. But I displaced 95% of my heating load with the smallest heat pump that they make in my home. And I— You know, so
and you were warm.
And oh yeah, no, and see, that's part of it. Is part of having it be like the test house is I keep it at 68 degrees. If it's not 68 degrees, that's when I march down into the basement. I turn on my Rinnai, and I warm up the base of the house so that, you know, it's able to keep up. And last winter there were only 10 days where I had to turn it on for 3 or 4 hours each time. And those occasions weren't necessarily when it was freezing cold out, when it, you know, because they operate when it's negative 10, negative 15, negative 20. They definitely put out heat at those cold temperatures. The times when I found the heat pump to struggle is when it's freezing rain or when it's a snow squall and there's just a lot of snow in the air and it's getting caught on the coils of the outdoor unit. The outdoor unit goes into defrost and it just doesn't put out heat while it's in defrost mode, which lasts 5 or 10 minutes. And so as a result, there were a couple of occasions where the house would drift down to, you know, 64 or 63. And that's below my acceptable test house qualities. Mm-hmm. So I'd go down and turn on the Rinnai to bring it up. So they definitely work at much colder temperatures than they're even advertised to.
So, Dana,
but they do have limitations.
Do you recommend that folks like Bonnie who have an older furnace, you know, keep that furnace for those days and, you know, run the heat pump when they can most of the year?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of different strategies, and that's exactly one of them, Tux, is leave your existing system in place, put in a heat pump, ride it as hard as you can throughout the entire season. And on those occasions when you're not hitting what you feel is comfortable, turn it on for that period of time and then turn it off and rely on the heat pump the rest of the time. You know, heat pumps, they're slightly more expensive to operate at colder temperatures, but even when it's negative 10 degrees outside, they're still performing at a place where their equivalent cost to oil is something like, you know, 2.25 a gallon equivalent. So they're very, very efficient, even at very cold temperatures.
So, Richard, do you want to go back to your original comments? Well, I think what you were talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. It really depends upon the balance point between how much heat loss happens on that particular day and how much heat is available to be supplied by the heating system. And if you've been able to be warm on the coldest days of the year over the past 20 years with this furnace, then that's adequately sized. But a furnace sometimes can put out a lot more heat than a particular heat pump. So the way you figure it out is get a heating contractor to provide you with a heating load calculation to calculate how much heat your house loses in its current configuration. And then you can start having a conversation. If it's a really big house with a big heat load, then it becomes a more of a shoulder season, 100%, and then most of the heating in the cold days, just like Dana described. But if the numbers work out right, you just get rid of the heating system and figure out another way to heat your hot water if it's linked to
that.
But
I also think this gets back to the thing. People do look for a magic bullet, and this time it's the heat pump. I know there's someone in my neighborhood, a couple of people have gotten solar PV systems lately, so the neighbor said, you know, I'm thinking about going solar. And I said, have you gone efficiency yet? Because that was my that's my baseline for every question that people ask me about their heating system is like, you need to reduce the heat load of your house first. Then think about how to heat it because it's going to be cheaper anyway and you're going to be more comfortable anyway.
We haven't even talked about geothermal or solar or any of these other heating sources, but Tux is making a good point here. None of those will do you much good unless you're buttoned up. Right?
Yeah, I don't mind which order they do it in, frankly, because if somebody installs a heat pump and it's not, you know, satisfying as much as their demand, then that's really their cue. Hey, I got to weatherize and tighten up to the point where I can totally provide 95 or 100% of my heating load with a heat pump. In some ways, that's kind of one of those challenges I think Mainers would be up to, you know, to figure out like, okay, I'm going to put in the highest efficiency heat pump and now I'm going to start, you know, figuring out ways of tightening up my envelope, improving my insulation levels to the point where I'm really comfortable and I'm not worried about my heating bills at all.
Let's go to Eric in Booth Bay. We'll try to fit in a few calls here at the end. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. Just a real quick question. I went online the other day to try to – we're thinking about having an energy audit done on the house. We're living here for year-round right now. And I went online and a couple of people got back to me, and one was a fellow who – was, he called himself independent, where they charge you for the energy audit, and it was about in the neighborhood of $400 to $500, and they don't sell any products. And he made the point that we don't have a vested interest in you doing X, Y, and Z. We simply tell you what we think you need to do, but we don't have any products we're trying to sell you. Whereas people who don't charge you anything are, they have a vested interest and want you to buy their services. And therefore, they don't charge you anything.
It's like the free brake inspection at the the brake shop. Yeah,
exactly. So, do you have an opinion on?
Well, you know, I'll take this one at least initially. You know, that's one. That is definitely one valid business model and something that some customers and consumers really value in an energy auditor. And you know, we want to encourage that. But at the same time, there are also people who would prefer to make one phone call and. You know, engage with one set of professionals that have been heavily referred by, you know, their friends or neighbors or whatnot and have the whole thing done. And so, you know, that's one of the secrets that we've tried to incorporate into the Efficiency Maine programs is allowing that latitude for people to make choices for themselves about how they want to approach the marketplace, what kind of contractors they want to have in your house. It's absolutely true. If you have an energy auditor that offers nothing but energy audits, they're going to give you straight up advice on all those things, and you may be skeptical about the advice that you might get from an energy auditor that also does everything else. But my experience and my relationships with the whole range of energy auditors and heating professionals and folks that work in our programs is I really trust them. I'm really proud of the contractors. And I have great relationships with them, and I have a great level of confidence that no matter who you choose, that you're going to see very good outcomes. And we have field technicians that inspect, and we, you know, when there are complaints, we look into them and talk to the homeowners and the contractors as well. So, I mean, whether your approach is you want to do first steps and then general contract it out, or you want to make one phone call and find somebody that you really like and just do the project. By all means, just do it. Go for it. Get that energy efficiency done.
Yeah, Richard, you...
I agree with everything that Dana said. A lot of people crawl into these attics and do this work not from a love of fiberglass and itching and seeing rodent droppings and things. They do it for the mission and values. So I would agree that most people are on the up and up. But it really comes down to trust. So you can trust people with advice, you know, to do your research, you know, check their reviews. You know, nowadays it's more seller beware. You know, if you do a bad job, the word gets out there. So do your homework. And there's viable models in both ways.
And Tux, this has become a new market, I'm guessing, or an emerging market here, the weatherization. And
sure, but I think to Richard's point too, you're going to expect a certain level of results just like you do with anything else. If you're not getting that results, then you need to help hold the contractor accountable.
And we're out of time. Appreciate you guys being here once again. Very informative. Dana Fisher, Efficiency Maine Residential Program Manager. Tux Turkle, staff writer for the Portland Press-Herald. Richard Riegel Burbank, President and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.